working out a few figures before I came in. I've looked at 24 trains per hour running through the core section of Crossrail 2, and if it's rolling stock with the same spec as the Crossrail 1 rolling stock, 1,500 people per train. Counting both directions, it comes to 72,000 per hour capacity, and that's roughly the demand from 200,000 houses. Interestingly, 200,000 houses is the equivalent of between 4 and 5 years of London's housing growth. I think that's an important point because it underlines the need to get this project off the page and others. It means that we can't just think about projects like this as being once in a generation opportunities. We need an ongoing programme of capacity improvements. The capacity increases due to Crossrail 2 obviously arise along the line of the route itself. But there are a couple of other secondary effects which I expect will kick in a similar way to Crossrail 1, freeing up some capacity on the central line by attracting passengers from the central line where it runs in parallel. I expect that Crossrail 2 will probably relieve some other sections of the network, such as the Wimbledon branch of the District Line between Wimbledon and Earls Court, which is one of the most congested sections of the existing network. And we can also expect it to relieve sections of the Victoria Line. There are a couple of other areas which benefit away from the route because of the connections that they have into Crossrail 1. So that's why connections and interchanges are really important. Firstly, we've got the Lee Valley, which benefits because of the connections of the rail routes going into Liverpool Street. And some other areas which benefit to the north and the west, the Bakerloo Line corridor coming in to Paddington, and the Jubilee Line corridor coming in to Bond Street. So there are benefits which arise on different parts of the network on top of the benefits which come along the route itself. So if you can try and fix that in your minds, and I'll show the pattern for Crossrail 2 now. And I think these seem to be complementary in terms of the areas which benefit. So whereas most of the Crossrail 1 benefits are east to west and a bit in the northwest, we've got areas in the south and west and the north and east due to Crossrail 2. Running along the line and looking at development opportunities, here we have the Upper Lee Valley opportunity area, which benefits from Crossrail 2. We have Euston, King's Cross, and St Pancras opportunity areas. And of course, there'll be an important link with High Speed 2 at Euston to be borne in mind. Going further into London, we've got Tottenham Court Road, of course, and then the Victoria area. And further to the south, we've got the South Wimbledon and Colliers Wood area for intensification. So these all benefit in terms of their journey times with Crossrail 2. Some of the other areas of the wider network which benefit include some of the lines coming into Victoria, where they will have better interchange for onward routes into central London. We also have the West London Line. So we've got some opportunity areas along the West London Line which will benefit Earls Court and West Kensington, White City. And of course, in the future, the West London Line could form a connection between Crossrail 2 at Clapham Junction and Crossrail 1 and HS2 at Old Oak Common. So it's quite a lot of interest in that area. And then we have benefits in terms of other lines which feed into to Clapham Junction. And these include Croydon. And I think it could be quite interesting in terms of the interchange between the tram link and Crossrail 2 at Wimbledon. So there are a number of areas which benefit, not all the obvious candidates in terms of the stations along the route itself. And to sum up, here we have travel time benefits, and I think interchange design is really important in terms of making the most of the potential travel time benefits. So that's important for connectivity. We've got the capacity increases, both the direct increases and the indirect increases across the network. Looking at the range of destinations which are served by Crossrail 1, I think Crossrail 2 opens up opportunities which are more residential rather than the business areas which are served by Crossrail 1. It may be that Crossrail 2 won't have the same level of overbuild, of commercial overbuild opportunities as Crossrail 1 has. But on the other hand, there's a really important opportunity in terms of residential delivery and being able to develop around Crossrail 2 stations and along lines feeding into Crossrail to make the most of that opportunity. And that, of course, needs to be balanced against local policies at those locations. And I think it's also important to consider the balance of residential and employment development so that we don't just set up tidal flow patterns where trains are travelling inbound full of residents in the morning and then perhaps returning only partly utilised during that peak for the tidal flow to be reversed in the evening peak. To make the most of two-way capacity, we need to think about the spatial distribution of residential plus jobs.